Welcome to another episode of our podcast, Let's Talk TriDelta. Thanks for joining us. I'm Karen White, TriDelta's CEO and editor-in-chief of the award-winning Trident magazine. We are now more than a few weeks into sheltering in place, staying home, and dealing with the unfolding circumstances around COVID-19. As TriDelta continues to support our members through these unusual times, we've launched a new series called Three for You. We hope you've been enjoying this content and know that we've got a lot more in store for you because you are our brave, bold, and kind sisters. On today's podcast, we're going to go back in time a little bit to look into TriDelta's history. While the current pandemic is nothing we've seen in our lifetimes, TriDelta has certainly seen its share of challenges. I'm hoping that by delving into our rich history, it can provide a little perspective to us and maybe even some hope as we navigate these uncertain times. You'll learn that TriDelta has only grown stronger and maybe even more relevant through the adversity we've faced from the very beginning of our founding. So today, it's my true honor to welcome a very special guest to the podcast, Ginger Hicks Smith. Ginger is an alumna of our Alpha Omega chapter at Emory University, and she has been one of our most steadfast and loyal lifelong volunteers and supporters. She has held countless volunteer roles, including service on the executive board. She has served as the president and chair of TriDelta's foundation, and she currently serves as chair of TriDelta's alliance. Ginger's love of history is on display at TriDelta's executive office in the Ginger Hicks Smith Museum and Archives. It's the cornerstone of TriDelta's executive office. It celebrates our past, but also provides a glimpse into our future. Ginger, welcome to Let's Talk TriDelta. We are so lucky to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Karen. I was delighted and honored to be asked to talk about a few turning points in TriDelta's history and how our predecessors found their way through times of adversity to a whole new way of being and doing. It's those timeless values we treasure adapted to new and changing circumstances. And as you might have predicted, I'm going to focus on three such turning points, but first a couple of introductory points. You've probably heard it said that TriDelta itself was born in adversity, and there's a lot of truth to that. Boston University, where we were founded, had only been accepting women students for less than a decade when TriDelta was founded.
Now, that's kind of crazy to me, Ginger, right?
Well, it is amazing to think about. And women were not widely welcome in higher education at that particular time. It just was not the thing. But our early members supported each other in the face of that discrimination, as well as worked to start a whole new fraternity and then its individual chapters. That was real work they were doing in addition to their schoolwork.
Absolutely. And Ginger, you know, I'm so excited that you're grounding us in our founding, right? That's a point that we've made over these last few weeks is TriDelta was truly born out of adversity. So this is nothing we can't handle. What I love that you're going to do is take us through times where the future was very uncertain for TriDelta, but we kept forging ahead. I also love that while you and I would love to be sitting right beside one another, having a great cup of coffee, we are not. We are socially distant, talking to each other from Dallas and Atlanta with your kitty cats in the background. And I think they're going to add some color commentary to today's discussion, right? Well, remind us of their names, please, because they're so cute.
Well, their names reflect, of course, my life. I've spent my entire professional career working in libraries and archives. So one of these girls is named Dewey for the Dewey Decimal System.
Of course.
The other is a tricolor, and her name reflects not only that, but also my lifelong involvement with TriDelta, and her name is Delta. So we've got Delta and Dewey meowing around here.
Well, we look forward to their contributions to today's podcast, which makes it perfectly fine, right? There is a chance that my assistant, Murdoch, could also lend his voice to today's podcast. So we're going to roll just like TriDelta does with the animals in tow.
We'll see what happens.
So take us through some of the turning points, and you're going to ground us in the TriDelta convention that helps define some of this, right?
Well, yes. And I think all three of the turning points that we'll talk about a little bit, we will look to the lens of convention. That's where some of TriDelta's best documentation and storytelling comes from, are the reports from convention. So that gives us a rich resource to use. All of these turning points came about as a result of great disruption to society as a whole, as we'll see. And each, interestingly enough, is also connected to TriDelta's philanthropic work, which makes sense because our purpose charges us to help our members in every possible way, and really by extension to help others in every possible way, and to exemplify all those good things, self-sacrifice, unselfishness, generosity, and kindness. And each also illustrates how our leaders really used our purpose and the values and virtues in our rituals to figure out how to go forward.
Well, it's a great blueprint, isn't it?
It certainly is. Sarah Ida Shaw and her friends were on to something good. So the first turning point I'm going to talk a little bit about is the World War I era. And I think it's important to stop and think that when we get to the World War I era, we are in the year 1918, which was only 30 years after TriDelta was founded. TriDelta was still very, very new at that point. Right. And we, you know, sitting here in the year 2020, we have over a century of history behind us. They had three decades of history behind them. So it's a very different perspective they had. Sure. Coming out of TriDelta's founding and leading up to 1918, TriDelta had been holding conventions first annually, then every 2 years, every 3 years, every 2 years. It was a little bit irregular in those early days. But there was a convention planned for 1918, but it was not held. And I read somewhere that in the very same issue of the Trident in which the invitation to convention was printed, it was necessary because they were getting ready to cancel and postpone the 1918 convention that they had to insert a page to say the convention was canceled.
Wow.
So the same issue of the Trident had both announcements, and that must have been no end of confusing.
Wonderful. So you were invited and uninvited in the same edition of the Trident.
At the same time. You didn't have to make any decisions.
Yeah.
So 1918, and we often associate the year 1918 with the Spanish flu pandemic, which we've heard so much about in relation to our current pandemic.
Sure.
The height of the Spanish flu in the United States really had not arrived by the time convention was being planned and then postponed. So that's a little bit less of a factor here. But the First World War was still raging, and the U.S. was very much in the war. There were limits on civilian transportation, especially train travel in the United States. So that was one reason they postponed convention, was because it was going to be very difficult and, in fact, really going against government guidance to travel to something like a convention.
Sure.
But equally problematic was the fact that several of TriDelta's national officers had gone to work full-time in war-related work, and they couldn't get away to go to convention.
Sure.
And this included TriDelta's national president, Bessie Leach Pretty, was working full-time for the Red Cross. And in the spring of 1918, she was sent to France. So it's going to be very hard to hold a convention with the president in France and the national officers elsewhere engaged.
Right.
So the decision was made simply not to have a convention in 1918 and to hope to have one in 1919, which is what wound up happening. So TriDelta reconvened for convention in 1919, and they dubbed that the Victory Convention. I love that.
Nice.
And in addition to doing business, they set aside designated time in the program for what they described as inspirational discussion and envisioning future possibilities. And the idea was to move away from all of the administrative and procedural work that had gone on at those previous conventions, because they were still trying to get this operation organized.
Sure.
And really focus on the idealistic progress and potential for the fraternity. And I just love the idea that here they are coming out of a war and all of the disruption related to it, but what they wanted to focus on was the future. Also, in that same time period in 1916, TriDelta began really its first national fundraising campaign, looking for a way to help its members. And what they chose was a student loan fund that would enable women who were already going to college to complete their educations, because it was becoming more and more important as years went by for there to be educated women available to be in the workforce as well as be at home.
Sure.
In 1918, TriDelta also, because their national president was overseas in France and face-to-face with the condition of French working women, particularly women who were working for the first time, TriDelta added to its fundraising. Instead of choosing between one or the other project, they added to its fundraising and raised funds to assist French women who were struggling trying to balance home and family in those early years of working. So the focus there, it really reflects Tridelta's purpose and values, helping each other, helping others, broadening the intellectual life. But it also reflected, and this is important, Tridelta's view of itself as an essential partner in higher education. Right. They want to stay relevant and stay connected to higher education. The next turning point we could go to is the Great Depression. The time period of the Great Depression is a little harder to pin down than the time period of World War I, which started and ended. The Great Depression sort of built up over time. But in the United States, we associate the beginning with the stock market crash in 1929.
Right.
Interestingly enough, in 1928, the year before the stock market crash, Tridelta started a big fundraising campaign, not knowing what was coming, because they wanted to raise funds for 50th anniversary scholarships. Again, that focus on scholarships, right, with the idea of making the first two awards at Tridelta's 50th anniversary convention, which was coming up in 1938, so just a few years later. Also, in the midst of all of that economic loss and insecurity during the Great Depression, Extension actually continued with 12 new chapters established between 1929 and 1938. And Tridelta even went international during those years, establishing its first chapter in Canada at Toronto in 1930.
That is amazing to me. Like, I want like our listeners to stop and really think about that, right? In the midst of everything that was going on with the economy, Tridelta forged on. And maybe even, right, because of what was going on as a support for women who were working to attain their degrees in higher education. I think that's fascinating.
And I think Tridelta saw an opportunity there. More women were going to college. More women were interested in developing a women's support network, although they probably wouldn't have called it that in the 1930s. But they were in still a largely male environment, wanted that support, knew about the sorority experience from, you know, other friends at other schools. And so they were interested in having Tridelta chapters come to their campuses. So Tridelta was able to expand during that time period, which is, I think it says a lot about what women in college wanted and a lot about Tridelta that was brave enough to plunge in and establish new chapters in the midst of, you know, massive economic uncertainty and dislocation.
Right.
You also get a flavor of the times from reading a little bit about the conventions during the Depression. At one point, they did note that donations to those 50th anniversary scholarships had slowed down a bit due to the Depression. But yet, oh, optimistic Tridelta's, they still met their fundraising goal by 1938. They didn't change the goal. They didn't change the time frame. They still made it, always.
Nice.
And interestingly enough, educational sessions at conventions focused on vocational education. In fact, one keynote address was entitled, "The Sorority Woman in Changing Social Order."
Oh, my. Oh, my.
So while all of the changes during the Depression did not have the same sharp focus like canceling a convention did during World War I, I think it really fundamentally changed how Tridelta operated and responded to its members, who were women really taking their place in a rapidly changing world. It resulted, as we've said, in a growth in the number of chapters when circumstances might have suggested otherwise. I mean, it would have been very easy to say, oh, no new chapters, we're just going to stay put, hold the status quo, don't do anything.
Right.
And it also resulted in Tridelta's really first large-scale and long-lasting fundraising campaign, something we have done a good bit of since then. So it established that precedent.
Absolutely. And just amazing, right, that Tridelta emerged from this stronger and more relevant than perhaps it had been before. And the adaptability to understand what women wanted and needed and to situate ourselves to be able to deliver that. That is very inspirational at this moment in time, right? As we think about how the world is going to change, right?
It's a very powerful message to think about Tridelta saying, as you say, coming out stronger and more responsive. And I think different, but different in good ways.
Sure.
In very necessary ways.
All right. So tell us about the third turning point, Ginger. So this would be World War II era?
This gets into the World War II era.
Right.
So convention in 1940, and we're going to hop from convention to convention here for a little bit. In 1940, convention convened as planned in Mackinac Island in Michigan. By the time of the 1940 convention, the United States was not in the war. But Czechoslovakia, Poland, Norway, Denmark, and Belgium had already been invaded and taken over. And the news that France had fallen, that was a real turning point moment in the war in Europe, that France had fallen to the Nazis was released during convention. I mean, the women were all together when they heard that news.
Oh, wow.
So convention put in motion, not surprisingly, fundraising for scholarships. Go Tridonta.
Yeah.
For students who would, once again, otherwise be unable either to attend college or to complete their educations because of the disruption of the war. I also think it's interesting, this is not convention related, but 18 months later, Pearl Harbor happened, December 1941, and the executive board happened to all be together in New York City for a National Panhellenic Conference event. So all of our national leaders were all together in New York and got the news about Pearl Harbor together.
My goodness.
Wow. So that takes us to the 1942 convention, just 6 months after Pearl Harbor. And that convention was originally scheduled to be in Sun Valley, Idaho, but they relocated it to Chicago for a more central location in response to regulations, again, reducing civilian railroad travel and rationing gasoline. And we've heard a lot about rationing in the World War II era.
Sure.
This was an all-business convention with no social or recreational activities planned, none. And that was a real departure because Tri-Delta had always had theme evenings and recreational activities and off-site activities and done lots of fun things at convention. This convention was all business. And they really wanted to focus on two things. One was how to plan for the fraternity if the 1944 convention had to be postponed or canceled. They'd already had that experience in World War I, so they wanted to be ready.
Sure.
And they wanted to select a war service project that fit, once again, with Tri-Delta's essential role in relation to education.
It's amazing.
Indeed, they did postpone. They did actually cancel the 1944 convention. Right. They didn't reschedule it. They just kept going. And they didn't meet again until 1946. And so that was only the one other time at that point in Tri-Delta's history when there had been a four-year gap between conventions. As Tri-Delta moved out of the war era, as they get to 1946 and beyond, they continued to raise funds for scholarships, and that fundraising for scholarships really became the core of what became the Tri-Delta Foundation when it was founded in 1986. So there's that continuity of fundraising for scholarships that runs all the way through all of these stories.
That's terrific.
The era after the war, which, you know, going into the war, they were planning for how they were going to get through the war. But the period after the war, who knew what was going to happen? So it was one of great dislocation and changes. There was a tremendous turnover in the number of volunteers because women were working, women were in the military and moving around, particularly military families were moving around.
Sure.
That resulted in reduced visits to collegiate chapters. And there had been a little bit of a lull and extension between 1938 and 1942, but then there was an unexpected increase again in requests for new chapters, and 10 new chapters were installed between 1943 and 1950, as yet more and more women going to college, wanting that sorority experience, wanting women friends, like-minded women friends who would support their academic endeavors. So it was another opportunity that Tri-Delta really took advantage of in a positive way for growth and to extend the opportunity to more women on more campuses to have this experience that they were looking for.
That is absolutely amazing to me, right? To know, and you know, it's hard probably for many of our listeners to imagine. There was no internet. We were not spending a lot of time on the telephone, right? I mean, this was largely done through train travel and handwritten letters and the U.S. mail to make sure that these things were happening. It's mind-boggling, right? To really think about how growth was achieved, just even logistically during those periods of time, let alone what was going on in the world.
And that I've often thought this is an amazing thing. But when you think about the earliest years in Tri-Delta and even, you know, forward into the 40s and 50s, no internet, no conference calls. You only made a long distance call if there was an emergency. It wasn't really,
right.
There was a lot of that in business, but this was probably a little different from that. But yet, not only did they establish Tri-Delta chapters and support the already established chapters, but they were able to do it in a way that was consistent enough that it didn't take away the individuality of the chapters and its campus location and its regional flavor, but they were able to do it consistently enough that it was actually a fraternity filled with Tri-Delta chapters and not just a network of clubs.
Sure.
I think that is really part of the thing that makes this an art and not a science in many ways.
I love the way you described that. So now tie this together for us, right? So each of these turning points, there were some commonalities, right? Some common themes.
Well, even if you look from the World War II era forward, there are lots more turning points that you could pick out. But these three really, they do stand out for lots of reasons. And they really let us talk about how Tri-Delta's brave and bold and kind leaders, they didn't wait around to see what was going to happen or how it would all turn out. They didn't know how it would all turn out. They focused on planning and on making things happen. They adapted to the changes around them, but they were flexible enough to take advantage of unexpected changes like extension, as we've talked about.
Right.
And they learned from the past, but they were looking forward and not backward. And I think that's just really key through any kind of upheaval situation.
Sure.
They did all this while preserving our fundamental purpose and values and using those unwavering constants to guide them in sorting out what was essential and what was not, because sometimes all the work in front of you looks just alike.
Right.
But it's important to be able to sort out what's essential and what is not. And they really balanced being idealistic with being very pragmatic. And I'm sure that balance moved around over time, but they were able to do it. In my reading and research, I unearthed this great quote, which I think sums a lot of this up so nicely. And the quote is this: "We are an ever-growing, purposeful organization."
Oh, wow.
I mean, that could have been said day before yesterday. It could have been said at any point.
True.
This happened to have appeared in the 75th anniversary of the Trident in 1963, which is interesting, but it could apply at any time.
Right.
It applied in 1919 when Tri-Delta was focusing on envisioning those future possibilities, ever growing. It applied during the Depression when Tri-Delta changed with changing times, ever growing, yet mindful of our purpose. It applied in the 1940s when Tri-Delta was working to ensure its own continuity and to sustain its essential role as part of the higher educational experience for women. So many things in the world around Tri-Delta have changed over our history, including practically everything about higher education. When you think about what higher education was like in the 1880s, and then you think about what it was like 10 years later, 50 years later, 100 years later, and now, there's not much resemblance there. So while all of that was changing around them, Tri-Delta has been able to navigate those changes by knowing the enduring value of the purpose and the values that guide us. Once again, Sarah Ajo and her friends put that down on paper really, really effectively.
Yes, they did.
So we may change how we work and how we organize the fraternity, how we organize our chapters, how we connect with our members. I mean, all of that with the handwritten letters right on up to, you know text messaging and other things. We may change the hows of what we do, but we never change the why we keep going.
Right.
It's because we have that North Star guidance of the fundamental purpose and values in which we were founded. And we all know that and have that in common. That's common language at Tri-Delta. So perhaps Tri-Delta kept moving forward because we haven't tried to go back and recapture that disappearing past, which you really can't ever go back and recapture. But we have worked together to figure out how to carry our timeless traditions and ideals forward into the future.
Oh, Ginger, that is awesome. I think that's the message Tri-Delta's need today in this uncertain time, right? Think about, we've got nearly 18,000 collegiate women at home, right? Trying to navigate college in an online setting for them to know and understand how Tri-Delta has come through this and worse is a huge source of inspiration. I know it will be. Thank you for treating our listeners to such a great walk through history. I appreciate you so much.
Well, it was a treat for me to be able to combine my love for Tri-Delta with my love for history and just see how it all weaves together. And also how it propels us into the future. And we have to think about it that way. I'm sure they did in 1918. I'm sure they did during the Depression. I'm sure they did in 1942 that, we need to be ready for what's next so that we can do it well.
Well, in these days and weeks where the clouds seem heavy, thank you for showing us the silver, gold, and blue lining of those clouds. We appreciate you so much. And to all of our listeners, I know you join me in thanking Ginger for being with us today. And if given the opportunity for all of you, please visit our beautiful Ginger Hicks Smith Museum and Archives at TriDelta's executive office. We'd love to welcome you there. Certainly at this time, we hope all of our members and families remain safe and that you all are following the important guidelines around COVID-19. I really want to mention that there are so many TriDeltas out there serving on the front lines of this healthcare crisis, working in healthcare and law enforcement, other essential businesses. Our thoughts and Delta love go out to them as they continue to serve unselfishly during this time. I want to invite you to stay tuned for more 3 for You topics coming soon at tridelta.org/3for You. And if there are additional topics you'd like to hear about, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@trideltaeo.org. And of course, please like, subscribe, and rate our podcast. As TriDeltas, we love 3 stars, but in podcast land, we like 5-star ratings. Thank you for talking TriDelta with us today. Stay safe, join us next time, and bring you